or 4062 to sign up or for more information. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for another interview with Barry Smoot, author of Failure to Protect. This week, we'll discuss the recent annual report by the Office of the Inspector General. But first, disability news for the week of April 3rd, 2023. A proposed update to the requirements for training pediatricians is prompting concerns that future doctors may be less prepared to treat children with developmental disabilities. The Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education, or ACGME, is the organization that sets standards for physician residency programs across the country. Currently, they are considering changes to the minimum requirements for pediatrician residency programs as part of a review that takes place every 10 years. Currently, the group requires that pediatric residency programs include faculty with certification in developmental behavioral pediatrics, in addition to other areas of specialization, with the intent that new pediatricians will learn directly from those with expertise in treatment of children with intellectual or developmental disabilities. Due to a shortage of pediatricians qualified in that area, ACGME wants to eliminate that mandate. Their plan says there should be no impact on patient care, but a number of advocacy organizations are taking issue with the proposed change. They say it would leave pediatricians even less equipped to treat children with autism and other developmental disabilities, while likely limiting the number of pediatricians who pursue the subspecialty and making worse the shortage. Dr. Tanya Froelich is a developmental behavioral pediatrician at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and president of the Society for Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics. She says that if pediatric residency programs are no longer required to have developmental behavioral pediatricians on faculty, medical centers will be less likely to have developmental behavioral pediatric clinics, reducing access to that specialty care. Dr. Daniel Corey, a developmental behavioral pediatrician at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and the medical director of Autism Speaks Autism Care Network, said the proposed change was a, quote, step backward in the training of general pediatric residents, end quote. Critics of the proposal say that the shortage of developmental behavioral pediatricians could be better addressed by encouraging residency programs to offer joint appointments to faculty from partnering institutions. They also urge programs to work with developmental behavioral pediatricians who are in private practice or to seek additional qualified faculty. Also, they suggest that ACGME could provide exceptions to requirements if programs are unable to find a qualified specialist instead of removing the existing standard. Currently, the proposal is up for public comment through Wednesday. You can find that link on the Disability Beat Facebook page. A bill introduced last week in the U.S. Senate would create a national council to identify best practices for helping people to avoid, leave, or modify guardianships. They would also have the task of collecting data on guardianships at both the state and national levels and interrupting the guardianship pipeline, where doctors and educators often recommend that families pursue guardianship automatically. Also, the bill would include funding for state protection and advocacy agencies to help people being considered for or living under guardianships. The Guardianship Bill of Rights Act was introduced by Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, along with Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania. According to Casey, quote, while guardianship is intended to be protective for older adults and people with disabilities, it can also lead to the loss of rights, fraud, exploitation, and abuse, end quote. Casey mentioned news reports describing guardianship abuses in several states within the last 2 months. He also mentioned pop star Britney Spears, who spent more than 10 years under a court order conservatorship. Casey said, quote, more than a year after Britney Spears' case brought guardianships into the national spotlight, there are still countless families across the nation fighting against exploitative or abusive guardianships with little recourse. My legislation would address the nation's patchwork guardianship system and explore alternatives to guardianships to better protect American civil rights while getting them the support they need, end quote. And finally, students finishing their high school special education programs in Northwest Indiana will soon begin receiving a diploma that actually has the word diploma on it. Recent changes have been led by the Indiana Department of Education. Previously, students with disabilities who completed a special education program received a certificate of completion. The Department of Education has recently amended its graduation requirements so those students can now earn an alternative diploma. According to Rebecca Grimala, an Indiana director of special education, quote, those of us in special education didn't love the certificate of completion. There wasn't a lot of weight to it, end quote. Grimala's district, as well as other school districts in Northwest Indiana, plan to begin granting these diplomas to students in May. Notifications were first issued in January, so school districts are still formulating their plans for graduation. With a certificate of completion, it is mostly up to individual school districts to determine what students have to do to earn it. The new diploma has a defined criteria and requirements by the state. Students must earn 40 credits or applied units. Credits are what typical students earn, and applied units are special education specific courses. Students may combine credits and applied units as well as work-based job training program. Grimala said, quote, it will really, we hope, give them more options for employability after high school. The number one thing we've heard from parents is they wanted students to have a diploma so that being part of the name, I think, is really important. We also feel it sort of honors the work that the students are putting in. And that's the news for this week.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this task known as why. It's not a question, but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by my most frequently returning guest these days, Barry Smoot, who is the author of a really interesting book called Failure to Protect. Welcome back to the program, Barry.
Oh, thanks for having me back. Like I said, I hope I'm not wearing out my welcome, and hope everybody knows that I'm being invited. I'm not pushing my way in.
Absolutely, you're invited. You know, you're like my new best friend these days with all the advocacy that we share. Though, as I say all the time, you know, we don't necessarily agree on everything, but on the big things, I think we do. You contacted me, late last week sometime, about a report that came out that included data on community living situations and institutional care and things that are going on in the state that the OIG has to kind of investigate. You want to talk a little bit first and explain to the listeners who the people are at the Office of the Inspector General and what their responsibilities are?
Sure, yeah. The Illinois Office of the Inspector General, where I spent the majority of my career at, They are assigned the task of doing all abuse and neglect investigations at state-operated facilities, private community agencies, meaning SILAs, residential programs, as well as day training programs. And their authority always expands as the care and treatment expands. But they are the sole investigative body that investigates the administrative side on the employees that are accused of abuse or neglect.
Yeah. So when somebody is accused of abuse or neglect, they don't necessarily call the local police department. They call OIG.
Correct. Yeah. Police handles criminal matters. OIG handles administrative matters, meaning somebody's job. Now, if a case becomes criminal in nature, then OIG makes the appropriate referral to the law enforcement agency of jurisdiction to get them involved in potential criminal prosecution.
Right, because if there is a crime that has been committed, OIG doesn't have the authority to pursue that.
Correct.
Okay, so this report that you sent me a copy of, this is something that OIG writes every year? Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes, it's called the OIG Annual Report, and if anybody wants to source it themselves, I'm going to throw out some numbers if they want to keep their pen or pencils handy. But the site, if they Google Illinois Office of the Inspector General with Department of Human Services Annual Report, they could summarize it and put Illinois DHS OIG Annual Report, and it will pop up. And it won't only show this year's, or fiscal year 22, it will go back several years and show annual reports historically. So you can go back and see how the data often doesn't change in relation to the numbers I'm going to talk about with you.
Yeah, so in this report, it talks about what kinds of things? What are the big categories of topics that are covered?
Well, it's all statistical data and numbers. They do some explaining and sometimes excuse making and stuff like that. Even when I was with OIG, I always loved crunching these numbers because you have to there's numbers within the numbers, if you know what I mean. You have to look at all the numbers and sometimes do your math to get the numbers you want. But the main thing is on how many allegations they received at either state facilities or private agencies, what the results of those investigations were, and percentages and rates. And, which I find these numbers, like I said, historical, they're earth-shattering, actually, because they really never change for the last 15 years. It's always about the same percentages, mm-hmm. which to me means there's a problem.
Yeah, well, I just looked at, page 2 of this report, and it said that in FY22, they opened almost 3,000 cases, which is a 17% increase from the year previously. So that seems like a pretty significant change.
Yes, and I think a lot of that has to do with all of the attention and publicity that's been going on with a lot of the situations at different locations. But I warn people when you hear about the phrase open cases, closed cases, pending cases, outcomes, blah, 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 it may look like it's fuzzy math. They're not trying to hide anything. It's just they have different terminology. But I've broken it down by some basic numbers that I think a lot of people are interested in. Is like in 22 at state facilities there was 1,061 allegations, and then at private agencies, meaning the SILAs and the day training programs, there was 1,930. Mm-hmm. Now, if you just hear those numbers, I'm like, oh my gosh, private agencies have almost 1,000 more allegations. Well, there's a lot more private agencies than there is facilities. So, that could account for a lot of that.
And a lot more people being served by those agencies than the institutional settings that are in the state.
Yes, exactly. And out of all those allegations, neglect is substantiated 68% of the time, while abuse is only substantiated 32% of the time. So, I'm sorry, I got that backwards. There's more abuse than neglect substantiated. Mm-hmm. Now,
are those numbers across the board, or are those specific to the SODCs or the community?
It's across the board between the both of them. Okay. That data is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the substantiation rate is what really drives home. It's always a rate that maintains about the same, give or take a couple percentage points. At state facilities, OIG only substantiates, meaning they only prove that abuse or neglect occurred in roughly 7% of the cases.
Wow.
At private agencies, they prove almost 16%, which is still bad.
That's horrible.
Yeah, well, let me put that in perspective here, okay? Again, I'm going to repeat. DD facilities, OIG substantiates, actually it's 7.05. At DD agencies, it's 15.79. Do you know what the murder solve rate in the nation is? Solving murders is?
Mm-mm.
Little over 50%.
Wow.
So let's take this. If this was murder solve rate at 7.05 or 15.79, we'd have a lot of murderers walking the street today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these rates, and I attribute to, I mean, and I'll argue this with anybody, those low rates, it's not condemning OIG. It's condemning the current system of protection. OIG can only, they only have so many burdens of proof they can use. And the current burdens of proof are failing. When you have that low substantiation rate, and that doesn't mean, oh, well, you'll have people say that, well, these individuals make a lot of false allegations. They do, but not that many.
Well, yeah. Okay, the other thing that I wonder about, too, is if there is, you said 16% are, maybe I'm getting the number wrong, are actually proven to have occurred. The abuse has occurred. What about
private agencies?
At private agencies. So is it possible or is it even likely that there is other abuse taking place at those agencies that is not being reported because the people who are the victims of that abuse aren't able to report it?
Oh, no doubt. There's no doubt. These numbers aren't even close to skimming the surface of the things that are occurring at state facilities and private agencies.
Wow. Wow. Well,
The rate is a little bit higher based upon, you know, it's not in OIG's annual report. They could track this maybe, but I just took it from the numbers. If I took Chester Mental Health and Alton Mental Health have cameras, okay? So the most substantiated cases on the mental health side or the DD side are Chester and Alton. Mm-hmm. And you can only surmise that what? It's because Chester and Alton have CCTV systems in place.
Yeah.
I mean, people could argue it's other things, but I'm just saying, you know, in my theory, it's kind of coincidental that the only two facilities that have cameras have more cases substantiated than others.
Well, that's an interesting figure because I've talked to people who say, you know, cameras don't help because what that does, you know, the staff knows that the cameras exist. And so that just pushes them to do their abusing in dark corners.
That's about 10% right and 90% wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's somebody who doesn't know investigations, whoever's, you know, like some of these studies they put out. Because, yeah, there is that small percentage of the really, really bad staff that are going to find a different location away from the cameras. But I'm saying from experience, I've done cases where staff do it right under the camera. Or they'll do something and they'll look up at the camera like, oh, crap. So it's you know, saying that they're going to be so smart they'll never do it in front of the camera is 100% incorrect.
Well, I would imagine that, you know, if you are working with a resident at a local agency or whatever, and they make you angry, you would tend to forget about the camera existing at that point. It's just, you know, you get mad and you retaliate.
Yes, and that's on the abusive outbreaks, I call them, where somebody loses their temper and does something bad. But let's take back, I read one of the studies, I forget the source, you're familiar with it, it was out of Australia. But it said that cameras wouldn't help because they can't go in bedrooms and bathrooms and private areas where a lot of the allegations occur. Whoever wrote that had no clue on investigations, because I've done cases like this. you can see somebody walking down a hall and walking into a room late at night when they had no reason to be in that room. That camera can tell you a lot. There's a, again, one of my favorite shows I like to watch. It's called See No Evil. It's a show about utilizing CCTV to solve murders. Rarely does the camera show the actual murder occur, but it's an investigative tool that law enforcement could use and OIG could use to prove that this event occurred. It doesn't have to see the actual act, but investigatively speaking, any investigator knows that all you have to do is see additional information leading up to or after an event that can help you during your investigation. The most important is additional witnesses that you didn't know about that you see in the area.
Ah,
that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that would. Well, what other numbers stick out to you that seem important that people ought to know about?
The case completions by OIG, it takes OIG an average of 85 days to do a facility investigation, but it takes them 152 days to do a private agency investigation. I don't know the answer to that. I can speculate. There's more pressure maybe from the unions, et cetera, to get their staff back to work where most private agencies aren't unionized. It could be because agencies are more spread out and OIG has to travel long distances to do these cases. There's a lot of hypotheticals, but it does take roughly, twice the amount of time to do a private agency case than it does to do a state facility case.
Well, they do say in their report that they have many vacancies for staff members at OIG, which could impact as well.
Yeah, they have many. That's to operate where you still use the state facility staff and the private agency staff to help OIG with their investigations. I think that practice should be abolished. Having somebody investigate themselves or their employer, I mean, is ridiculous. OIG should do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, OIG would literally need double the staff they have. So somebody needs to give them the appropriate staff. Like at one point, DCFS was sued federally because they were basically doing what OIG was doing. They were taking long to do it. Their substantiation rates were low. Somebody sued DCFS federally. And next thing you know, there was a mandate down that they had to literally triple their staff. And they did, and they maintain that today. But OIG, until somebody makes the state lawmakers or the governor's office do this, then it won't happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to have to force them to do that.
Well, looking at these numbers, and I'm looking at the report where it tells about the number of cases of physical abuse at the different SODCs. Shote has 72 cases of abuse in 2022, and they're the ones that are most well known, at least the most talked about, because of all the different people who have been charged, or, you know, not many have gone to jail for their crimes, but have been charged with crimes against residents there. But I noticed that Kylie has 84 identified cases of abuse, and you don't hear anything about them.
No, and the reason showed is just because of the rash of criminal investigations and arrests that were made, which, again, I can't talk about the specifics of the cases, but those came about when I finished my last 2 years as chief of security at Shote, and I was having cases lead to criminal charges pretty common, and it was simply I was following the protocols, and the protocols lead to investigations that can lead to criminal cases. Now, the number of allegations that occur, to me, that means nothing. You should look at the substantiation rate, because if you have a large agency,
looking at that right now.
Yeah, if you have a large facility or a large agency, meaning large by a number of individuals served, and they have hardly any allegations, that's a red flag that they're not reporting what they should be reporting by law.
Hmm.
Sometimes an agency or facility has high numbers of reports, and that's fine because that shows the reporting what they have to report. What matters is the substantiation rate.
Yeah. Do you think that culture of staff protecting other staff exists at all the institutions in the state?
Yes.
And And so what is the remedy? Because they're shorthanded as it is.
Well, the remedy is, you know, of course, number one, the no-brainer that OIG and the state police to this day are recommending be adopted are CCTV in common areas. Schott, even as they are putting cameras outside, which is deceptive to the state of Illinois taxpayers. They're wasting money putting cameras outside, which does nothing except video squirrels and animals outside. It's rarely does an allegation occur outside at Schott. So they're doing that to say we're putting cameras up, apparently, because it serves no purpose. Those cameras should be inside in the general areas, hallways, and day rooms.
Well, so, what kind of training do people who are staff members and supposedly supporting individuals who live in these places get appropriate training that helps to catch tendencies before they're placed? Or is it just, you know, we have a warm body and they want to work here, so we're putting them in, on the job?
Yeah, basically. I mean, expecting just a general staff, you know, which Illinois requires a high school diploma to do that, I don't count on that happening. The failures that I see occur in all state facilities is when your professional staff, your social workers, your doctors, your nurses, your managers, when they are present and yet they never report anything that they witnessed, the odds of people not reporting something they witnessed and working in that environment are slim to none. So if they're not reporting it, they're not reporting things they should be reporting. So when you have a breakdown of your professional staff that are risking their license, that's a concern at every state facility. You have to have a set of eyes. And I'm still advocating if nobody wants cameras and somebody needs to fund impartial on-site monitors that can be on those units every shift to be the cameras in the form of a human set of eyes. Because if the people are up there, if everybody reported what they should report, there'd be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, apparently not.
So, and I don't want to forget to say this is because from what I understand, you know, they said 2 years to move individuals out of show. My question to that is, I'm not advocating for any place to close or function. I have no opinion on, you know, I know some people don't like me because I don't get on the side of close all facilities and open, you know, put them all on Scylla's, because I know Scylla's have problems too. I want to fix it all in relation to safety. But if they're supposedly going to move those DD populations from Schott to Murray really has no protections in place different than Schott.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the Schott staff, not that they're bad, but they're going to transfer to Murray. So if they're literally moving them because of risk of abuse and neglect, why is the governor's office saying, we got 2 years to do it? A lot can happen in 2 years.
Absolutely.
The next time, if there's something bad that happens to an individual before these individuals have been moved or protective actions have been put in order, that falls flat on the governor's office.
I think parents and family members need to do something. And not only that, but people just in the general community who have no connection to this abuse going on need to do something. What is that something, Barry?
Well, they need to demand that they stop being deceived.
Yeah.
Deceived by the waste of the money that's being put in cameras outside at Schott. Deceived that they're making it out to be only a Schott problem. It's a state facility and a private agency problem on these safety measures. These things aren't hard to fix. And again, if they don't want cameras, they just need to get what I call the, you've heard of the Untouchables back in the FBI era. They were a group of individuals that were hired because they were untouchable and uncorruptible. They need monitors, whether it's short term, just for a year, maybe two, at all of these state facilities that can monitor on every shift at a facility until this all gets under control.
Well,
until
thank
the
you
culture
so much.
Of cover up.
Thank you so much for your time. We are out of time. I will put a link to this report on the Disability Beat website and also a link for your book, which I think is important for people to read, Failure to Protect. Thank you so much for joining me today.
All right. I appreciate it. Have a good evening.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.